Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I talk to Guelph Politico contributor Eli Ritter as we hold court again for another Guelph Stuff segment, a monthly series where we talk about stuff going on in Guelph. For this second Guelph Stuff, we're talking about 2018 and the various Guelph-related stories that happened over the last 12 months. We've lived through two elections, a myriad of scandals, a series of insurmountable issues, and a weird summer of rampant public displays of debauchery. So, there's much to focus on, and so little time. So it's our top five that is the topic of this edition of the Guelph Politicast. I figure all this is kind of self-explanatory, so I'll try and keep this intro brief. Eli and I both chose our top five Guelph news stories of the year. So other than that they be Guelph-related, we agreed on no other criteria and came up with each of our lists independently. Of course, there was bound to be some overlap. Guelph is still, in essence, a small place. But where was that overlap going to occur? That was going to be the interesting question in the back of my mind while recording this podcast. Of course, if you're an avid Guelph Politico fan, and why wouldn't you be, you already know what my top five is. I published a whole top 10 almost a week ago now. My focus was on the biggest political news stories of the year, and I admit that on at least one of them, I have an axe to grind. Eli instead went chronologically and more broadly with news items that resounded beyond the borders of Guelph. So it's a good mix of stories, and maybe you'll have a nice time for the next 30 minutes or so, reminiscing about the year that was, or maybe you'll just be excited about leaving it all behind on midnight on Monday. So I caught up with Eli Ritter just before the break to talk about Guelph stuff. Eli Ritter, we are back for more Guelph stuff. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay.
All right, that's good.
So, oddly enough, for our second Guelph stuff, because it's oddly time for the year end, we're going to do it's that time of year for lists, so we're going to do top five, our mutually exclusive top five news stories of the year. So we're going to count down from five to one. Now you are this sort of junior associate of Guelph Politico.
Yeah.
So technically I should take the lead, but I'm going to be a generous boss and let you start off with your number five pick.
I think that's just putting me on the spot. I don't know if that's generous. No. Well, full disclaimer, I was in Toronto from January 1st to May 1st this year for school. So I feel like I missed out on half the year of local stories, but...
Well, you missed out on quarter anyway.
A quarter.
A third?
Okay. I'm great at math. This is good. That's not what my degree is, so it's good.
You're not going to be sending anyone into space. So.
Nope. Maybe reporting on it? I don't know.
Not with those math grades. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Right. We're getting off... Anyway, number five. You're number
right.
five.
Okay, so I'm going to do it chronologically because I couldn't decide, you know, which one's more important because I think the stories themselves are important to certain groups of individuals, right? So,
That's a good point.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I guess I would start with the story of the going to the University of Guelph. We are a university town.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the story around Professor Edward Hedekin. And where he made demeaning remarks to a person, a student at the school. And there was a whole investigation into that. And it was about this anthropology class.
Mm.
So that was a bigger story at the time, I think, for Guelph. Mm-hmm. Like even CBC picked it up, CTV picked it up. So it got some national attention. Even the article I have in front of me is from the Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm.
So, that kind of got picked up. And I was the editor-in-chief of my student publication in Guelph-Humber, and even we picked it up. So right. It kind of grew a bit.
What were the circumstances of that? Like, what was he accused of saying in class? Because that's, I mean, I think that the I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know that this is one of those stories that like gets picked up because it's like juicy, controversial, and there's both sidesism at play. It's yeah.
Right. So if I can read sort of an excerpt from it.
Yes.
So this student, Karen Campbell, first year student at the university, said the incident began when the student challenged the professor on one of the kind of topics that he was lecturing about. The professor claimed that the student was being disruptive and asked if the student carries on like that in his other lectures. So kind of being rude to the student. And the student was defending himself, saying that he has a severe anxiety disorder and no way meant to be offensive or disruptive. And there were some other students that sort of backed up the story. And what happened is Hedekin essentially told this main person, Campbell, that his opinion was not welcome and that he did not want to have his ideas challenged.
Right.
He, as we all know, university is kind of about this open... Yeah. conversation
right
in academics.
Yeah.
And the two students and other classmates on social media claimed the professor referred to the student's educational assistant as his handler and noted that he needs to be controlled. So the student speaks out, you know, wants to challenge something, and then the professor's like, well, your handler you know, control him, which is didn't go over very well.
Also not the point of an assistant, right? So
yeah, and so, and I believe this professor was on tenure. He's been at the university for a long time. I've heard his name before. So yeah, that's what happened with that whole story, and that was something that was picked up, you know, locally, Guelph Mercury, Guelph Today, and across the spectrum of news.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think there was like a university investigation, but that was like. Nothing really came of it. Like, there's nobody fired and nobody censured or anything. I mean, because he's on tenure, so it's
he's
job for
there.
Life. Yeah. It's kind of disappointing, too, because, you know, that's the kind of story that, you know, people like, I hate to use the name, but Jordan Peterson can point to and talk about the lack of, you know, rigorous intellectual discourse at Canadian universities, and you know, students challenge things and they're shouted down and mocked, and it's too bad. But that's a good number five. I'm gonna stick to my popularity contest though.
All right.
So my number five is the minimum wage increase.
Ooh.
And it's not so much because of the fact that the minimum wage was increased, or the fact that the premier and the new PC government decided they weren't going to carry on the planned increase to $15, which actually did cause some, I'm not going to say hardship, but you know, it caused a bit of trickiness because companies were preparing to enact the 15, and you know, there are all sorts of changes in terms of the bookkeeping. In terms of particular to Guelph, there was a story on CTV Kitchener a couple of days after the new year, and this is in our neck of the woods, on Silver Creek Parkway.
Okay,
there was a restaurant, Smoke and Tony's Barbecue, that closed. And the owner blamed the increase in the minimum wage. And this was like literally a few days after the new year. And he closed, and CTV did this big story. They pretty much took the owner's word for it that the minimum wage is cut. And of course, it fell into this narrative that a lot of the mainstream media had constructed, that the minimum wage was going to be this job killer, was going to be this small business killer. Pretty much anything that was going on, like if a business was changing its hours, or if, you know, maybe they weren't hiring, or, there was a story on Guelph Today that, the general manager of Stone Road Mall was blaming the minimum wage increase for fewer hours in the mall, or the mall reduced hours from during days of the week or so. It opens like at 11 instead of 10 now. So, you know, it fit into this narrative that the minimum wage was like the increase in the minimum wage, which was the end of the world. If Tyler Calver, who was the reporter, had talked to anyone who might have known something about what was going on, this was the second Smoke and Tony's establishment at that location that had closed, the third Smoke and Tony's. I don't know if they're all sort of related or if it's like some sort of brand that somebody buys, but it's a third establishment in Guelph called Smoke and Tony's to close in like the last 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
And so there's like very little connection to the minimum wage. Like, right. Like maybe Guelph just doesn't have an appetite for barbecued pork lunch counters. I don't know. But that reporting left like a very sour taste in my mouth. A lot of that mainstream media coverage. It wasn't just CTV. It was all over the place. And but just because that was the Guelph. The Guelph angle. Thank you.
Right. No worries. No worries.
That sort of particularly ticked me off that he comes in, that this reporter comes into Guelph, interviews the store owner, and offers no other context beyond like, well, if any other restaurants close, and any and all reporting about the minimum wage also mysteriously left out the workers who are going to benefit from a minimum wage increase. Don't think I've saw any stories where they actually took the time to talk to somebody working in the service industry as a waiter or as a sales associate or as a clerk and said, you know, how is a minimum wage increase going to affect your life? Because that would also put a pin in this whole story about, you know, the greedy minimum wage earners sinking small business, which, you know, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but not that much of an exaggeration.
I don't know. I think that I saw a few analysis after the fact when the mainstream media maybe caught on to the other side of a story.
Right.
And and they showed that in a lot of cases, citing experts, that in the long haul of things, it really wouldn't damage business. So,
no.
And if you think of it this way, you get more from your job, you can spend more into the economy. I mean, I don't want to insert too much of my opinion here, but that's just what I've read in the analysis, right? Is that right. That's how it would work out. So,
yeah, yeah. That has how it's worked out in other places that have enacted living wage. But anyway, number four for you.
Okay, so my fourth one, and I'm trying to keep this chronological. I think this is chronological. So the other one was the Guelph IndyCar driver, Robert Wickens, which was a big story for a couple of days. So there was a crash. The article was posted August 19th. That's when it all happened in the States. And, you know, he's airlifted to a hospital for some injuries he received on his lower body. And then he made a recovery. And he's back at it again. It didn't take him very long. I think it was like a week, I believe. And there was some spinal surgery. And and he's from Guelph, Ontario. That's his background there.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'll bury my personal opinions about car racing as sport. but I know that he obviously, because he's a Guelph guy, he has a lot of local fans. And I mean, and that's, you know, the injuries were pretty severe.
Yeah.
It was, you know, he's still got a long road to recovery, too, even though it seems like he's keeping an upbeat attitude and is determined to get back at it. But, you know, it's not going to be an easy process for him. And, I guess that's maybe a positive story to come out of this. And, you know, that you can be seriously injured. You can be at the top of your game and, one slip and you're in the hospital, even in your sort of at the top of your profession. It's kind of sad too. But I mean, I'm not a car racing fan, but I appreciate that he had a lot of fans, or he has a lot of fans here who wish for it.
Which definitely had a big Guelph impact. I think that's why it makes my list, just because there was a lot of people that showed the support on social media. And again, another one of those stories that went from Guelph to national, international coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's kind of neat to see Guelph on the map for something really good. Not the injury, right. But the driver.
Right.
All the best to Robert, and hopefully makes that full recovery, gets back on the track. Do you know if he's racing again now?
I think he's still recovering.
He's still recovering. Okay.
Because I think there's some paralysis. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure he's got physical therapy and a lot of, work to do to sort of, before he's probably back behind the wheel of something even, Even something more sanguine like a golf cart, he's probably a few months away. Yeah, or like maybe even Mario Kart. Maybe he's racing Mario Kart in the hospital. I don't know. My number four is the Claire Maltby debate.
Oh, spicy!
Thank you, Ed McMahon. The Claire Maltby debate is interesting because there's environmental. Very important environmental aspects to it, but I find the angle about sort of trust and in sort of what government is doing with this plan, how behooven they are to development interests, and you know, this sort of plays into the much bigger provincial picture when we're talking about developers donating money to advocacy groups like Ontario Proud, you know, to influence people to vote for sort of developer-friendly parties and candidates. But just the Guelph angle, I find that there's an incredible level of distrust in terms of... When I went on the Tour of the Moraine bus ride, and to hear Mike Marcolongo talk about, you know, well, this area is owned by this house, this developer, this area is owned by, you know, it's already kind of like divided and subdivided. It's just developers seems like waiting to put shovels in the ground. And, right. And from that perspective, it's sort of easy to understand why people who are advocating for smart planning, people who are advocating for environmental protection are like super, super legitimately concerned. The flip side of it is too, and I find this sort of persuasive, and Scott Stewart was on that tour as well, and I think a lot of people were anticipating like getting to like rip him up a bit because like sort of the city representative, and he's like, look, you know, we got to put lines on a map, because when we put lines on a map, then we know if, you know, that line should stay there or if we should erase that line. And I find that very that argument persuasive, that, you know, you sort of have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Still, it's difficult. It's difficult sort of watching it play out because Rolling Hills was part of that development. Now it's not. There is a road, North Road South, through the wetlands. Now it's not there. And it's hard not to feel that, you know, maybe some of this is just like throwing the dart at the dartboard and seeing where it lands.
Yeah.
But this is not only a story for this year, it's also going to be a story for next year, because the plan is still in motion. There are still concerns about how it's all going to play out. And of course, now that Bill 66 is on the table, people are also going to be even more suspicious about whatever direction the city takes with it, knowing that there's going to be some shortcuts in legislation about how much public feedback and where you can build and what you can build and how long it will take to get approval. And I have a feeling it's only going to get worse, but we'll see.
I do remember I was at the last major council meeting when they were talking about the Moraine and the Claire Maltby area, and where they had something like 20 delegates, and we had everybody up there. Even Eggy Malernes was up there. It was shortly after the provincial election. I remember that. I remember that all happening, and people were passionate. Like, they like, this is what we want to see it look like. There was I believe it was phase two at that point being proposed. Mm-hmm. And, you know... Yeah, people were passionate about it. Definitely a big, big story, right? So, all right. Are you throwing it to me?
I am.
Okay. Well, I think my next one really works well with the one you just said.
Okay.
And Sinhe Glass Plant.
Oh, that's my number three, too.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we can both talk about it.
Yeah, no, you start.
Great minds think alike.
Apparently.
So, well, yeah, and this is a big story, especially for Ward 4 in Guelph, the West End. It's something super local to both of us, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think the most local you can get. So... to give a brief summary, Sinhe, Chinese company, wants to build a glass plant that was going to, you know, have millions of liters of water from the Guelph watershed or the Guelph area watershed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of uprising against that. The issue that came into play was that it was under the Guelph Aramasa Township, technically. Mm-hmm. So Guelph City Council had no say on it. And I think that probably frustrated a lot of people in Guelph.
Right.
So it was actually up to the township council to decide what would happen. A lot of Guelph councillors and the mayor were against it publicly, or at least inclined that way, it seemed. Correct me if I'm wrong.
There was a lot of open hostility towards it. And actually, the CEO, Derek Thompson, submitted a letter advocating to not approve the project on behalf of the city.
Right. And, you know, just down the road, 5-minute walk from where I was living at the time at Parkwood Gardens Church, we had that big meeting with the township council.
Yeah, they brought Guelph Aramosa Township Council to Guelph for that meeting.
Yeah. That's not normal then, eh? They normally meet in Guelph Aramosa.
I'm pretty sure that was because there was so much interest in the Guelph area that was done.
Right.
I mean, I would be hard-pressed to say when the last time one felt compelled to go to a Guelph Aramosa Township Council meeting.
Right.
No disrespect to Guelph Aramosa Township, but I mean...
But there are four councillors?
I think it's five.
Oops.
Well, the vote was 4-1.
Right.
In the end. It was this bizarre thing where you sort of really appreciate that borders are just lines that we make up.
Right.
Because... Yeah, even though it was in the Guelph Aramosa Township, it was going to be water that Guelph uses, that we use. There were going to be chemicals involved in processing the glass that were going to be in the air. They were going to carry unprevailing winds over Guelph. So it was, you know, it's also a Chinese company. And, you know, say what you want about China. There is a certain image that, you know... they're not exactly up on the latest safety standards. And on top of that, you know, there was a portion of the plan, too, that was like, we're going to build dormitories for, like, people to stay.
Yep.
And I understand that's a thing in China, but that's not a thing in North America. Most people don't want to live at work unless you like, work from home, right? you're like a CPA or something, and you have, like, the front of your house is your office or what have you. It's not really a Canadian thing. It's like, I'm going to go work on the glass plant lines and retire to my dorm. it was a sort of scary proposition. But I think I don't know how many counselors were maybe entertaining the idea. But I mean, it was a pretty decisive, like, no, we don't want, except for the one guy whose name I can't remember. But
Jay Baumeister.
Good work. Good job.
I don't know how I remembered that. and I think just to continue a little bit on it, what was cool is that once again, one of those stories that got more of an international thing. And there was some intrigue because some people, there was rumors going around that this was something that the Chinese government had agreed with our federal government that they would bring a glass plant over. But there was never really any backlash on Trudeau for that, I don't think, that I recall.
Was that confirmed, though, or was that just, like...
I'm pretty sure that's just rumor. I don't want to confirm it without fact-checking that.
Because they wouldn't probably respond to rumor.
No, I don't think that's their... And then, to add to that, a couple weeks later, our premier, Doug Ford, blamed Guelph for dropping the glass plant.
And yeah.
Mike Schreiner had a great response to that.
Yeah, Doug Ford gets up and, like... Well, the honorable member for Guelph, like, just threw 400 jobs away.
It's like, fake news.
And then it was fake news because Mike Schreiner doesn't represent Guelph or Aramosa Township. But the extra part was when he says, like any one of my MPs would gladly have this glass plant. It's like, no, they wouldn't.
And it was his Speaker of the House that represents that area, which
that's
is
right.
The funny
Ted
part.
Ted Arnott.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. I bet Ted Arnott was like...
Please don't. No, I'm like, not
shut
here.
Shut up. I don't need this. I'm Speaker. I got stuff.
Yeah.
It's a great story. it's one of these, not to get off topic too much, but I mean, it's one of these Trump things that, you know, when people are drawing comparisons between Ford and Trump, and, you know, it's just Ford heard this somewhere that Guelph, he latched onto 400 jobs, and then when Mike Schreiner stands up, knowing where Mike Schreiner's from, he then is able to, you know, it's like Grandpa Simpson putting together the history of the United States from the back of gum wrappers.
Yep.
It's kind of just that.
It was something funky to watch.
It was something to watch, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Let's skip to your number two.
Oh, yeah, because I stole your number three.
Well, it was a mutually agreed number three.
Okay, that's good. All right, so my other one, and I really think I've gone off the chronological order thing now. Actually, no, let's stick to it, because I think I have stuck to it. So I would say the other one is, and I don't know if I'm stealing another one of yours again, mm-hmm. but and now this is the obvious elephant in the room, but election night. I mean, that was the big story.
Okay, that's election. Sort of mine, but I'm going to take a different angle. You go ahead with election night, though.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, just to state the obvious, there was not a lot of change on council. There's two new councillors.
It's hard to get more obvious than that.
Yep. I mean, a lot of the results were, you know, some people saw it coming, some people didn't. There was the big stories of the election was looking at, and we discussed this last time, mm-hmm, but there was mm-hmm. like the slate. There was online voting. That was a big one that distinguished a lot of candidates from other candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a few other ones that kind of went around the table, things like the environmental aspect. Mm-hmm. There's certain candidates that were very focused on that, others that were focused on, you know, development and in the economy and how to structure our city for the future, kind of different things, right? You know, transit is always an issue in Guelph. It was also an issue in the municipal election. And yeah, so just to put the obvious one out there, I don't know how more local you can get. The municipal election definitely impacts one of the stories of the year for sure.
Right. The election night itself, I think, in the two biggest races, which was Ward 1 and Ward 4, which you ran in, full disclosure, you were one of the candidates for Ward yep. 4. I think that if you take out a couple of competitors in either race, you might get a different result. Because I think there was no one. I think there was a lot of discord with some of the people on council because there were so many options
got divided. Yeah.
So not that I would ever say, you know, if you want to run. Like, don't run unless you think you're going to win, of course. But but I think that's sort of one of the takeaways is that there was, you know, in Ward 1, you know, between Barbara Mann and Charlene Downey, they probably cannibalized each other's vote. And if it was just one or the other, you know, it would be very easy to see one of them upsetting probably Bob Bell, who was the second place finisher. The election was also my number two, but I look at it from the perspective of the race itself,
right?
And who all ran? Because it's sort of I'm calling it an off year election because sort of it's the going into the second term of the incumbent, and that always seems to be and it wasn't just the Guelph thing. You look at it in Toronto too. John Tory had a pretty yep. easy walk to re-election. You look at Kitchener in Waterloo. You know, Jaworski and Verbanowick had a pretty easy re-election run. The interesting thing in our area, Doug Craig, long running mayor of Cambridge, got upset by newcomer. Yep. Catherine McGarry, former Cambridge OPP, actually, she's MPP, loses her Queen's Park seat, picks up the mayor's seat.
Yep.
like someone else we can name in Brampton. Anyway.
I was just going to say.
Yep. But the Guelph race, we saw such incredible, an incredible number of women stepping up. And this is after, you know, they had the sort of the women recruitment effort, the Canadian Federation of University Women, trying to, you know, encourage more women to run so that we can, you know, maybe stymie some of this, you know, misogyny that certainly came up in the last election. A lot of people of color running, which was really great. A lot of youth running, including Aggie, including you. Jax Thornton in Ward 1.
Brendan Clark, too.
Yeah, so there was a lot of diversity in terms of the candidacies. And it's very easy to focus on, like, oh, we just, like, re-elected everybody. But, you know, at the same time, Rodrigo Galler, probably the first Latinx person to be elected to Guelph City Council. Dominique O'Rourke, she makes, I think, five women on City Council, which isn't 50%, but close. Certainly closer to 50% than the last council. So, I mean, I think there are positive steps forward. And I think the race was more interesting than the results in 2018.
That's a really good take on it, I think. And it's cool because you're able to look at it not as a candidate and kind of look at everyone's race. And I felt I didn't know what was going on in other wards. I was so focused on Ward 4 that I didn't see the other part of it, right?
And that's probably how you should be running.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I should be focused. And you know what? You make a really good point about how, like, there's so many options that I got divided, because between myself and the fourth place person or fifth place person, there was nine of us. It was only like 100-150 vote difference. So we were all really close. And like you said, a variety of candidates, different backgrounds, different ages. I mean, Indu Aurora is really neat, has a different background too. So, I mean, and she came only like very close, like 200 votes from.
Yeah, she had a surge in the end of the night that it looked like maybe she was going to unseat Mike Salisbury, but it wasn't surgy enough, if that's a word. Anyway, that brings us to number one.
Okay, so. You know, I think if I was to rate it in importance, which I said I wouldn't, I think election night might be one of the top ones. This one seems a little like less important after that. But I was going to talk about Highway 7 and the delay again.
Yeah.
And that is due to the provincial government and looking for another review, despite the fact that they already reviewed it.
Worth noting, a pro-car provincial government, too.
Yeah, so who knows how much transit is going to improve. And I did want to take a unique angle on this, which you might be impressed with. I don't know. But no.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, we'll see. No, okay. So I have tried going. So I usually work some brand ambassador work, which means I'm in malls, kind of engaging people, get them to enter contests and stuff sometimes. So basically, I go around to different malls. And so I was in the Fairview Mall in Kitchener, which is hard to get to via GO Bus because I'm not driving. So I have to take 29 and then 48. There's an hour stop over at Aberfoyle, even though it's 11 minutes down the road. It's not very great. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
2 hours for like a maybe 25-minute drive. So I got tired of that, and I had a coupon for this new company called Root, which I think you've reported on before.
Yeah, featured back in September on a Politicast, yeah.
There we go. And so that's when they came about. I heard of them too. I was really excited for them. And so I was excited. I wanted to try it, and I did. So I had a round trip there and back for my last day of work in that area, and I really liked it. I got to ride the Teslas. It was very quick. It's $20. And we're talking about
$20 one way, we should know.
$20 one way. Yeah, exactly. So what I'm getting to with this is this idea of the transit and how it's going to be a pro car Highway 7, which might look different from, you know, what it might have been under the previous government. And I want to say that there are worries about how GO Transit might improve between Guelph and the KW region, which I believe around 25,000 people go back and forth between the two regions, which is why Route was established. Now, Route is great. I've used it. I'll give it my review. Really great. But for some people, that price is a little unsustainable.
Yeah.
Because it's
especially daily.
Yeah. And it's almost double the price of taking the GO. I guess the importance of this story is for those 25,000 people and for the environment, getting cars off the road, and mixed with this Highway 7 review, you know, what is the future going to look like with that? Are we going to have this GO Transit happen under this government? And, what does that look like? Just asking the question.
I did ask the question when I was at the announcement for the 25% March train. For the GO train.
One more.
Well, he was not wrong. It was 25%. But I asked about getting more GO bus service, and that's not necessary. I'm paraphrasing the transportation minister, but he's like, we're reviewing it, and it's not necessary. Like, they're focused on two-way all-day GO, Which I understand. Yes, that's important. That's an important part of this. There's going to be controversy coming because it seems like they're proceeding with it without having to build the freight bypass, which seems dicey, to say the least. That, you know, there's going to have to basically be like some kind of traffic cop to make sure that the freight doesn't get in the way of the coming passenger train.
Yeah.
But it's there's so much going on here that you're right that to go bus to go to the park and ride in Aberfoyle, wait an hour to get the bus to Kitchener, that's nuts. And Greyhound is not keeping pace. Greyhound is actually pulling back service, although, you know, perhaps maybe we could be grateful we still have Greyhound service in here in Ontario. The Highway 7 thing, it's so bizarre because it's like we're building a highway. If I thought we could depend on Doug Ford for one thing, anything, it's to build freaking roads.
Right?
And it's the terrible part is that the work had begun.
Yeah.
That land at the end of the Hanlon Expressway had been appropriated. They just finished work on Woodlawn, closing that section of the Hanlon, the section between Speedvale and Woodlawn, doing the underground work for the Highway 7 expansion. Part of that was to lay the multi-use path, which is great. We need that path. But they were doing several things at once, and one of the things that we were doing was getting the infrastructure underground ready for the highway. And that seems kind of pointless now since we're back in review mode.
And like I heard about this when I was considering running for council, like August 2017. I was warned by some people on council that this is going to be an issue for your ward when, you know, the next term. So if you make it in, this will be a thing. And now it's like, you know,
it's still a thing, but nobody knows what's going to happen to it, right?
What's going to happen? Yeah,
it's something that is just sort of, you know, I know it's infuriating to both chambers of commerce, Kitchener and Guelph. I don't know exactly how bad the traffic situation is. I'm taking sort of as anecdotal that a lot of people, you know, are pointing out. But, you know, what would help relieve that even more? Probably some more transit, probably more direct transit. And it's not just, you know, getting people to Kitchener. It's about, you know, getting people to Cambridge, getting people to Waterloo. Like, even, like, to Fergus, you know. Elmira, there's so much to focus on there. It's crazy. My number one is another election story. Ooh. Which is the election of Mike Schreiner as MPP, which is history making, of course, which is always fun when Guelph gets to make history. But I mean, his victory was fairly decisive, like 45%.
Strong mandate.
A very strong mandate. And I mean, that was all sort of grassroots and, you know, just pounding the pavement for not just for during the election campaign, but for 4 years. Working out at Guelph, you know, going to Guelph events. Scotty Hertz calls it the snap bump, where, you know, you get your picture so many times in the snap that you sort of become ubiquitous. You know, that's how Frank Valeria did it. That's how Lloyd Longfield did it. This is just, you know, the Scotty Hertz theory of. Politicking, the snap bump. But, I mean, it was earned, and he earned it. And I've seen some griping on social media from certain quarters that, you know, oh, he's, you know, more focused on, you know, party leadership. And because he is a party leader and, you know, sticking it to Doug Ford. And it's like, I understand that perception, but having observed Mike on the job, he's doing a lot. He's carrying a lot of water for Guelph, and he's been a good representative for Guelph, and I think Guelph is sort of feeling that it was a good call. And I mean, no matter how good the other candidates were, like Aggie was very strong, Sly was very strong,
especially like Sly for the community, I would say. Like
Sly,
a community person.
Sly,
right?
Yeah, I would say Sly was like a local celebrity candidate. That was a really good, a really good get for the local Liberals. And it's a shame that, you know, we can't have two MPPs or three.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, I have a feeling we may see Sly again in some capacity, whether that's an elected office or maybe some kind of higher office somewhere down the line. Who knows? You know, Mike, it was a hard-earned victory, a well-earned victory. It seems to be
I'm not going to say it's going to like start a green wave, but I mean, there was polling this week that the Green Party and PEI is in the lead, that they have the most support of all the major parties in PEI. They have two MLAs
right.
In the PEI house. So we'll see what happens. It's, you know, Mike has certainly made his presence known at Queen's Park. He's, you know, no matter what the story, and it isn't just environment stories. You would think any environment story, they'd go to the green guy first, but no, it's like stuff about Taverner, stuff about decorum in the legislature. They go to Mike, and Mike gets quoted, and, you know, you can say that's not representing Guelph, but it is, and it looks good on Guelph, and we'll see what happens next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's going to introduce his private members bill in when the legislature comes back in February.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
So that it's going to be protecting the Periscope Moraine. I want to say the Periscope Moraine Protection Bill. But, I mean, so we're going to have like a three-car pileup with Claire Maltby, Bill 66, Periscope Moraine Protection. So that's going to be something to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talked out about 2018. How about you?
Yeah, I think so. It's time for the future.
It is time for the future, and January is going to be a very busy month for council stuff.
Yes.
There's like 10 council meetings. There's budget meetings starting. Yeah. Regular committee of the whole starts up again. Regular council meetings. Transit service review.
Yep.
Development charges review.
And you can find it all on GuelphPolitico.ca. Oh, and I was going to ask you a question.
Okay.
What do you think? We have live streams from Guelph now, which is something that was part of my platform.
Yeah, so no, it's cool. I find it easier to use than the Rogers live stream.
Yes.
And it's available. It's available on the same page you get. It's free. Yes. But it's there on the where you get all the council information.
Yeah.
And it's a good picture too. I think it's a better picture than the Rogers one.
Nice.
So I think it's high def. Or at least it looks high def. It may be faux def, I don't know, but it is worth checking out if you haven't already.
You heard it straight from Adam. It's faux def.
It's faux def. Oh, let's wrap it up.
Yeah. All right. It's been a year.
It has been a year. But thank you, Eli, for looking back at the year with me.
Yeah, thank you.
And once again, that was Eli Ritter. If you want more year-end commemorations, you can go to Guelph Politico, where an article about the top 10 political news stories of the year is now posted. And Eli will be back again this time next month for another edition of Guelph Stuff. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics. It's Sid Dale. The host for Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph by considering a donation to Guelph Politico, and you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.